Chapter 10, Step 8, Contagious Kindness. New York City artist Martin Kornfeld was onto something when he created a noteworthy artistic piece a few years ago. In 2013, passers-by of his Greenwich Village townhome began to notice that Marty, as friends call him, had taken it upon himself to release a little bit of sunshine into the world, starting with his own neighborhood. Using all the colors of the rainbow, Kornfeld painted and hung a sign that read, "If we all do one random act of kindness daily, we might just set the world in the right direction." The artist's work was a tribute in memory of his mother, who insisted that her children do 2 random acts of kindness every day. Kornfeld took it another step further, offering hand-painted posters of his quote to anyone interested. New York City artists aren't the only ones turning their attention toward the contagious tendencies of kindness. Political scientist James Fowler of the University of California, San Diego, and medical sociologist Nicholas Christakis of Harvard University have taken notice as well. On March 8, 2010, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences published Fowler and Christakis' extraordinary experimental findings. In a series of tests, participants played a game where each one was allotted a certain sum of money. Their instructions were easy. 1. Keep as much money as they desired. And 2. Donate as much as they desired to a common pot shared by all the other players. This wasn't a team game. All were seeking their own individual benefit. The findings of the game were extremely interesting and conclusive. From round to round, the more certain anonymous players made large contributions to the community pot, the more generous and kind the entire playing field became. The conclusion? Open acts of kindness and generosity provoke others to do the same. But artists and researchers aren't alone. Others have documented this exact phenomenon. In her 2010 Helix magazine article, journalist Shannon Maynor records, "Kindness is contagious. According to a study done by researchers at University of California, Los Angeles, and University of Cambridge, and University of Plymouth in the United Kingdom, when we see someone else help another person, it gives us a good feeling, which in turn causes us to go out and do something altruistic ourselves," the study found, which was the first of its kind to systematically document this tendency in human nature. Cambridge's Simon Schnall led a 2009 research study conducted by the U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics, which found that 1.6 million more people volunteered in 2009 than in 2008. This raises the question, why are people being so nice? Schnall's response was, "When you feel this sense of moral elevation, not only do you say you want to be a better person and help others, but you actually do when the opportunity presents itself." Schnall's use of the term elevation was actually coined by one of our founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson's term elevation is defined as a specific human sense far greater than mere happiness. Elevation is the emotion we experience when we see someone else engaged in acts of kindness. Scientific research, behavioral studies, and modern art have all found Winology's Step 8 to be true. Kindness is contagious. Sometimes, son. In our dog-eat-dog world, kindness is rarely seen as an attribute of winners. Good guys finish last has been heralded for years, mainly from those trying to excuse themselves from basic human courtesies. But these mindsets could not be farther from the truth. Instead of good guys finishing last, my observations have been, bad guys finish alone. Think about it. What does it matter if you finish on top in your vocation, exploits, and finances if you lose your most precious commodities along the way? Things like your spouse, children, friends, strategic partners, etc. Such is the story of far too many wealthy, so-called successful people. Winning the wrong way will cause you to end up alone and empty despite all your accomplishments. But it doesn't have to be that way. You can win and be contagiously kind along the way. My father, Ken, has lived an exemplary illustration of contagious kindness in front of me my entire life. The consummate gentleman, my father, has always been the one who opens doors for others, helps grandmas cross the street, and does whatever he can to better the lives of those around him. Simply put, Pops never met a stranger. I'll never forget the day I came home to find my dad mowing a single mother's yard across the street from our house. Now, in the suburb of Tulsa, Oklahoma, where I grew up, yards were formidable to say the least. These lush fields of St. Augustine weren't postage stamp sized, as is so prevalent in today's suburban neighborhoods. No, these were real yards, with real thick grass. As a young teenager, who would do just about anything to relieve myself of manual labor, I was astounded to see my dad pushing that mower through thick, overgrown, 12-inch tall grass, in someone else's yard nonetheless. I asked him, "Pops, what are you doing? Why are you mowing Miss Robin's yard? She paying you to do that?" His response was baffling. "No, Joel, she's not paying me. Robin is all alone and doesn't have anyone to help her. Sometimes, son, you do things just because it's the right thing to do." He had no idea how much those words would shape the philosophy of my life. In that moment, Pop's selfless, contagious kindness provoked me to action. Courteous and calculating. There was a day and age when kindness and courtesy ruled. It was a time when people were concerned about the needs of their fellow man and intentionally sought to enhance the lives of others. It's time to go retro. It's time to reclaim the lost art of kindness. Today, the overwhelming fear of ladder climbers is this: if I'm nice and kind, someone will take advantage of me. What they fail to realize is the difference between kindness and naivety. Being kind does not mean you become ignorant to the evil some people possess. You can be kind and yet not position yourself to become a victim of bad people. It's possible to be courteous and calculating at the same time. This type of contagious kindness is what the first Christians were taught by their Messiah back in the first century, to be gentle as doves, yet simultaneously shrewd as serpents. In fact, regardless of your religion or lack thereof, you'll need to learn this ancient art of cunning, yet sincere, kindness to sustain a life of winning. The secret to sustainable victory in life is helping others win along the way. Obviously, there are certain competitions and areas of life where there's only one winner. However, other areas may host multiple victors. Just as the universal law of honor contains the power to sustain your winning position, the principle of contagious kindness melds perfectly with honor, taking the enlightenment of investing into the realm of humanity one step further. Every winologist must come to this understanding. While you're reaching upward for the stars in your quest to become world class in your field, never forget to reach back and pull others up with you. Helping others win promotes health and loyalty. It also ensures that when you attain your goals and are ready to celebrate your accomplishments, people will actually come to your party. Without contagious kindness, victories are simply less satisfying and ultimately less sustainable. Band of Brothers. The great Ralph Waldo Emerson is noted for saying, "The only way to have a friend is to be one." Here's my addition to this quote, which you might find contradictive at first. Your competitors may also wind up being your friends. While competing on the world stage in martial arts, some of my greatest friends were also my fiercest rivals. As strange as it may seem, we shared a very real camaraderie along with a common goal. We all wanted to win, but we also trained together to sharpen each other's skills. As we prepared for competitions, we actually enhanced each other's abilities, and we all improved along the way. We were a band of competing brothers, connected by our ancient art and quest for victory. On tournament days, it was a different dynamic. If we were fighting against each other, we would jokingly say, "I'll see you in 2 minutes," while touching gloves. Once the bell rang and the gloves touched, it was on. Before and after the match, we were the closest of friends. During the match, we were fierce competitors. Oddly enough, this balance forged us into the most finely tuned competitors we could be. And here's what we discovered: winning is simply more fun when you win with somebody else. You can experience a win-win. Win-win. I have a very dear friend and strategic partner named James Matthews. James and I have been uniquely connected our entire lives. We first met in 1996 at a small community meeting for young married couples. Over the next few years, we found ourselves reconnecting and reuniting at various and unrelated locations. You can only imagine our enthusiasm when we discovered that our parents had been friends since back in the 1970s. Needless to say, there's a touch of destiny on our relationship. Known as the Indian Dos Equis man, James is often referred to by many of his friends as the most interesting man in the world, although he prefers the pseudonym the Indian Forrest Gump, since somehow he's done almost everything imaginable. With his connections to the White House, the Rockefeller Foundation, Mumbai's Bollywood, and even the Indian Prime Minister's office, James is truly a fascinating man. I'm also proud to say that he has embodied the principles of Winology for decades. One night a number of years ago, James taught me a very valuable lesson while we were discussing one of the most vital parts of doing business, negotiation. During our conversation, in which I did most of the listening, James enlightened me on some of his negotiation tactics he employed while doing deals on the highest level of international business. I was amazed and shocked at his approach. James said, "I always let the other side win first." "What?" I exclaimed. "Can you explain exactly how that works?" He said, "Joel, I'm going for a win. I know I'm going to win. But my secret is to always let whomever I'm negotiating with win first. As long as they feel like they're winning, they're completely happy with me achieving my desired outcome as well." Needless to say, I was incredibly intrigued. James' ultra-successful negotiation technique boils down to this. He had mastered the art of contagious kindness, so much so that the people he was negotiating with felt so good about their position, they gladly gave him everything he wanted in return. It truly was a win-win deal. The truth is, you don't have to be negotiating multi-billion dollar business deals to experience the joy of a win-win. You can enjoy those scenarios with the people around you right now. This brown-nosing, dog-eat-dog, survival-of-the-fittest mumbo-jumbo we've been sold on for so many years is a total lie. Yes, you can adhere to it and seemingly win, for a while, but in the end, you'll likely find yourself alone and dissatisfied. The antidote for this nonsense is quite simple. Helping others win is one of the greatest ways of ensuring victory yourself. And kindness is the key. Pay it forward. In the 2007 blockbuster movie, Evan Almighty, Congressman Evan Baxter, played brilliantly by multiple award-winning actor Steve Carell, has a visitation from God and becomes a modern-day Noah. After building his ark and saving his city from impending danger, Evan has a conversation with God, played by the epic Morgan Freeman. In this dialogue, God explains the importance of the modern-day ark. God: "How do we change the world?" Evan: "One act of random kindness at a time." God: "One act of random kindness at a time." Ark. More than just a great movie scene, God and Evan unveiled a powerful truth. It's true, random acts of kindness can change the world, creating a positive ripple effect in restoring our faith in love and compassion of the human spirit. Many years ago, I worked with a team to organize a life-enriching experience for 40 students. For 1 week, these teenagers would leave all the comforts of their North Dallas suburbanite lifestyles and serve as social workers in some of the roughest areas surrounding South Central Los Angeles. These 7 days would allow them the opportunity to impact people far less fortunate than themselves. But in the end, their lives, along with mine, would be the most changed. On the last night of our trip, my friend Mike and I were crossing the street at the corner of Ivers and Hollywood Boulevard. We were making a run for some frozen yogurt when we happened upon a very interesting man, Victor Estrada. Though his last name was recognizably attached to my favorite 1970s Hollywood actor Eric Estrada of Chips, Victor was anything but a famed Hollywood actor. Conversely, he was a homeless criminal on the run and addicted to drugs. Our innocent yogurt run was about to get really interesting. At first glance, we would have never known Victor's current state, seeing that he was dressed relatively sharp. We later learned that he had stolen the clothes earlier that day. After our initial, "How do you do?" Victor was quick to offer his quest to purchase drugs. Obviously, an interesting conversation ensued, which ended with us praying for Victor and offering to find him some help. But prayer was just the beginning. The opportunity to spread kindness was staring us right in the face, and we responded. When we found out the clothes Victor had stolen were his only wardrobe, Mike quickly took off his hoodie sweatshirt and handed it to him. Then we took him to the mission center where we were staying, and Victor had his fill of hamburgers. He actually took some with him. Lastly, and most importantly, Mike gave him his own Bible. With a belly full of hamburgers, a new sweatshirt, and a Bible, Victor's countenance had completely shifted so much that he was trying to give his food away to others in need. He was also encouraging everyone around him with the kindest words, behavior not expected from a homeless drug addict. Something was happening. Kindness was spreading. Understandably, skeptics would assume this was all part of his scam, mainly because his initial inquiry was to score drugs. But the ending of this story would prove them all wrong. Our search for hotel accommodations for our new found friend came up empty. Due to the fact that he had no form of ID, no one would take him in. Once again, Victor was forced to sleep on the streets. Hoping for the best, we hugged and said our goodbyes. We couldn't help but to assume this would be the last time we'd see Vic. But we were in for a huge surprise. The very next morning, guess who showed up at our building, still gripping his Bible in his hand? Victor. His only reason for stopping by was to show his gratitude, nothing more. He didn't ask for money. We even offered it, but he declined, saying that he didn't need it. After exchanging a few pleasantries, Victor told us that he was on his way to turn himself in for the crimes he had recently committed. He decided to get clean, pay for his wrongdoings, and make a fresh start. This was great news, but there was more. Victor surprised us yet again. Before he left, I asked him, "Hey man, where's your new hoodie sweatshirt?" Victor answered, "I gave it to a lady last night on the street. She needed it way worse than me." This, my friend, is the power of paying contagious kindness forward. It's real, and it works. Open your eyes. Stories like this are rare, but they shouldn't be. When's the last time you went out of your way to help someone you didn't know? Or better yet, someone who couldn't help you in return? Let's take it a step further. Who are the people who seem to be your competitors, but you have the ability to sharpen and enhance? Believe me, they're all around you, probably right under your nose. The real question is, can you recognize these opportunities for kindness? Many times we are too blinded by our own pursuits to see those positioned alongside us for great win-win opportunities. Open your eyes. Opportunities await. Your Step 8 Contagious Kindness Assignments are next. Step 8 Contagious Kindness Assignments. Take an honest inventory. Is kindness a natural reflex to you, or do you have to work at it? What would your strategic partner say? Ask them. Do you tend to easily trust or be a bit naive? Or do you assume everyone has an agenda? Think about it for a moment and list how you could find a harmonious balance of shrewd kindness. Can you recollect any time recently when you could have been more kind or thoughtful? Maybe to a coworker who was having a bad day and needed encouragement or even help. Maybe to a needy person on the street. Or maybe to someone who looked lost and in need of direction, but you were too busy or consumed in your own life to take a moment. Resolve to become more aware, available, and action-minded. Be ready to walk out contagious kindness. As you go through your assignments, remember these words from renowned American author Mark Twain. Kindness is the language which the deaf can hear and the blind can see. When you speak the language of kindness, you discover one of Winology's greatest secrets. Life is so much sweeter when you live to enrich others. Now, get ready for the ninth and final step of Winology in discovering the anchoring power of your life, great love.